Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm your guest, Bailiff Jean Gray, in for Jesse Thorne. This week, we're clearing out the docket. May I read you our first letter, Judge Hodgman?
No, because I want to say hi to my friend Jean Gray. Hi, Jean Gray. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm very sweaty.
Yeah, so here we are. We are recording this at the... We are post-Labor Day, so I have taken off my white patent leather shoes and my white patent leather pants and my white patent leather rash guard, which was my uniform of the summer. And now I'm wearing...
It seems like a lot.
I'm now wearing my tweed pajamas in anticipation of autumn. What did you do today on this hot day?
I took a nap at about 6 o'clock in the morning before I went to get my passport, which is always a great, great fun. Now, if you've ever been to the passport office, it's a good time.
I have been. I go once a year. That's where I summer. Actually, I summer at the passport office.
At the passport office.
Yeah. Well, it was air conditioned.
490
Hudson.
Those
benches. Yeah, that's the one. Right across the street from the building that houses Dutton, the publisher of my books, The Areas of My Expertise, More Information Than You Require, and That Is All by John Hodgman. That's called a plug, Gene. Now, let me ask you a question. You have anything to plug before we even begin?
You know, you can always get some music at jeangray.bandcamp.com. There's so much to choose from. There's even a book and an audio book on there. I'm taking a break from recording for the summer so I can continue with my live talk show called The Show, and also work on the next project, which is it's a live play, I guess, of sorts, which is we're doing Goonies 2. So doing a lot of work on that.
Oh, you're staging a sequel to Goonies.
Yes.
Who will you play? Corey Feldman?
I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then I actually watched Celebrity Wife Swap. I don't know if that's a... nobody should really watch that.
Do you know something, Jean Grey? Do you know at the height of my minor television celebrity... This would never happen today. But at the height of my minor television celebrity dumb, I was approached about being on that show.
Really?
And swapping my actual wife for someone else's wife.
Did they tell you up front who it would be, or is that... Because I feel like it's not a surprise.
I think I would recall.
Or did you not get that far?
No. I barely opened the letter before I heard my wife screaming, "No way!" And I don't want to swap my wife. I love my wife. And
no, it sounds terrible.
And when you think about it, it's like, if they're asking me, do you know what I mean? If I'm the quote unquote celebrity, I don't want to belong to that wife swapping club that would have me as a member. Because who are the other people they're asking? Like, if at my level, it could be... I couldn't even guess what reality show creep or... I don't... You know what I mean? Like, that was not in an even minutely interesting proposition.
I can see you being uncomfortable. I think you're downplaying your celebrity, but I can see it being an uncomfortable thing to do. And this particular episode was Corey Feldman and Tommy Davidson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Kind of sounds a little bit like they pick people by just, you know...
I think they have...
I don't know.
I think they...
Just throwing
it sounds
marbles
like,
on a floor.
Yeah, it sounds like that, but basically they just ask... everyone, and only the saddest people say yes. No comment on the lives of Corey Feldman or Tommy Davidson.
No, none.
I mean, you know, Corey Feldman, I think, has been advertising his sadness with his position in life and vis-a-vis his former child stardom and where he is now for a long time. I think that that's true. But Tommy Davidson, oh, I mean, he's a good dude, right? I mean...
Yeah. No, great dude. And especially in juxtaposition to Corey Feldman.
Yeah. But I bet you I would have gotten, Corey Feldman's wife. I bet that's, do you know when they filmed it? I bet you that was the one I was in for. Now I'm regretting it.
I don't think you should ever regret that.
But Jean Grey, for the people who don't know, is a rapper, a musician, an author, a talk show host, an actor, a polymath of all things awesome. So she has the show, which is her live talk show at Union Hall here in Brooklyn. But the next big thing is The Goonies 2, which will be staged in New York City, correct?
Yes.
On what date?
September 24th at Union Hall.
Union Hall in Park Slope, Brooklyn, one of my very favorite places to perform. And you guys should all go and see it if you live in the area. And if you don't live in the area, check out Jean at Jean Grey. That's JeanGrae.bandcamp.com. Is that a fair place to go to get all the things Jean?
That is incredibly fair.
All right. It is the object of this podcast, to be fair. It's the object, and as with all objections, overruled. Let's go to the first case.
Yes. May I now read you our first letter, Judge Hodgman?
You may now read the letter. Bong. That's a new thing I just made up.
Dan writes, my girlfriend and I recently attended a sporting event during which the stadium played the song YMCA by the Village People. We found that our C's during the song oriented in different directions. I say the opening of the C should be directed towards the dancer's left so that those observing the dancer from the front recognize it as the letter C. This is the way the Village People performed it. My girlfriend claims that the C should open to the dancer's right, since this seems like a proper letter C according to that dancer's point of view. We need a ruling since we are young and attend many weddings. Knowing that white people love dances that include instructions, we're bound to have an awkward experience when the YMCA is played.
Well, before I weigh in, Jean, what do you think?
So I feel like there is a very clear answer to this, unless you are just home by yourself performing YMCA to yourself.
Dancing as though no one is watching.
As though no one is watching. The clear point of the song is to dance as if everyone is watching, because they are. So the opening of the C should be directed to the dancer's left, because it's performed for people to look at. It's kind of like if you got a tattoo and it was just written for you to read, which is one thing.
Yeah.
But pretty sure that you did not do that.
You don't get the tattoo on the inside of your skin.
No.
Get it on the outside of your skin. Ladies and gentlemen of the podcast, Jean Grey is absolutely correct. The Village People did not dress up as I'm doing this from memory now, construction worker, Native American, motorcycle man,
policeman.
I'm missing one. Astronaut?
Ooh.
Firefighter?
Fire?
Construction?
It seems right.
All right, now I got to see which one I missed. You keep thinking.
Scientist.
Throw out some more occupations while I check.
Veterinarian, which would be very. Dentist would be good. Very sexy.
So many people are yelling at the podcast right now. Do you know what it is?
No.
You're gonna kick yourself, Gene. Soldier.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude in green fatigues. Or sometimes a Navy outfit for singing in the Navy.
In the Navy.
Oh, yeah, right?
That would make sense.
I think he was the lead singer. Randy Jones, Glenn Hughes, Felipe Rose, Victor Willis was the...
soldier.
No, he was the police officer. David Hodo was a construction worker, and Alex Briley was the soldier. So there you go.
Sorry, Alex.
Now, these nice young men from Greenwich Village, New York City, did not dress up at these things so they would not be looked at. They dressed up with these things so they would be looked at. These Village People did not bring gay disco culture out of lower Manhattan in the 1970s to the world and give that gift to the world so that your narcissist girlfriend could screw up their dance.
No.
I don't know about you, Jean Grey. I love the Village People because I remember watching the Village People on Solid Gold when I was at my grandparents' house in Philadelphia, and everyone in that room loved the Village People. And they were not necessarily, and I say this with great affection for my family, who is lived in a working class neighborhood of Philadelphia, and at that mm-hmm. time in the world, they probably would have different ideas about how they felt about gay people, right?
Yes, understood.
They dressed up as masculine cultural icons as a part of a profound art project that got all of mainstream America singing along to How You Could Pick Up Men at the Y. And then they went on the Love Boat. And that's amazing, right?
All, you know, yeah, it was amazing that, you know, it could culturally go that mainstream in people's faces. And, you know, I grew up in Chelsea. I went to school in Greenwich Village and lived directly across the street from a YMCA. And I had no idea, pretty much, you know, the stories of YMCAs. I, you know, did gymnastics summer camp there. And then I was like, oh, later on in life, I was like, oh, it's the one. I see. And I wouldn't have seen had they been doing the C for themselves.
Yeah. So, you know what? This is an important piece of American popular cultural heritage. And I order Dan's girlfriend to stop messing it up with extreme prejudice. Ugh. Next, especially if you're dancing at a heterosexual wedding, like respect. So show some respect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That for that and for the electric slide, you don't go the other way. You know, you got to get it together. Yeah.
Now, I will say this about my family in Philadelphia. They could then and still can electric slide like nobody's business.
That is what's up.
That is what's up.
And kudos.
All right.
We're going to go on to the next letter.
Oh, should I make a, shall I make a song, a sound? Bong.
Yes.
That's my gong of judgment.
Aaliyah, I believe, writes, I file suit against my boyfriend of 3 years, Jason. He knows that I love Harry Potter. Through all the times we've experienced the Harry Potter world in different media, in movies, games, comedy sketches, he's expressed enthusiasm for the story and the world.
Let me stop you right there.
However,
Jean Grey, let me stop you right there. Did she say comedy sketches?
She did say comedy sketches. As very popular, I just went to a run of 20 UCB East just Harry Potter comedy sketches. That didn't happen.
No. Oh, okay. I thought you were serious, and I was about to say, no, thank you. All right, read on.
However, he will not read the books. This would be fine. No, I know. But he continues to ask me questions about characters or scenes when we're watching a movie or playing a game based on Harry Potter. He has also expressed great interest in visiting the wizarding world of Harry Potter because of his affinity for theme parks and his interest in the Harry Potter world. Judge Hodgman, will you issue an injunction that he cannot visit the theme park until he has read one of the books from the series, which I will provide him? He is still welcome to ask questions about the series, but he should no longer be allowed to make glib remarks about the character motivations and plot until the above condition is fulfilled.
Yes, Bailiff Jean Grey. Before you hear my decision, what do you think?
I feel like that's fair. I also kind of feel like maybe Jason could be that kind of person who watches along with a movie and kind of just asks what's going on for the entire movie, even if you guys are both seeing it for the first time. He might be that kind of person. But, you know, if you're going to express interest, don't express feigned interest. Just get involved a little bit so that you don't have to annoy your girlfriends.
Jean Grey, you are partially correct.
I see.
Only insofar as you don't go far enough. Not only will I issue an injunction that he cannot visit the theme park until he has read one of the books from the Harry Potter series, but also, Aaliyah, I think you should break up with this creep. To be fair, it hadn't occurred to me until you mentioned it, Jean, that it may not simply be that he's an illiterate know-nothing who refuses to read a book, right? It may also be that he's just an annoying person who asks a lot of questions during the movies, no matter what, whether he read the books or not. But we're never going to know unless he reads this book. And the fact, you know, a premise of this podcast is people like what they like, and you can't force people to like something that you like, such as reading. Do you know?
Yes.
But you can.
That is very true.
You can make a reasonable demand if something is really important to you, and the person wants to share your life, and this guy obviously does, Jason, and wants to share your life in a very specific way, which is in Harry Potter fandom, it is reasonable to say you should read at least one of the books. And let me tell you something. Reading Harry Potter is one of the easiest things in the world to do.
Yeah.
Right? It's not hard. It's not hard. Not a hard read, Jason. Not a hard read. If you can't just do it and read one of the easiest reading books in the world, then I don't know what to say about you. John Waters said very famously, and I'm reminding myself that this is a family podcast.
I know which quote you're about to use, and I have that t-shirt.
If you go home with somebody and they don't have books, don't hug and kiss them. That's not exactly what he said in the last part, but you know what I mean, parents. And some only children who are precocious, who, like me, read John Waters' book when you were 11 years old and learned a lot about the world very quickly.
Perhaps Jason can't read.
Well, you know, I get that some people just don't like reading books, but for the sake, if Jason can't pull off the simple stunt of reading a Harry Potter book, which is basically like going down a water slide, which I bet you he would love to do.
Loves theme parks.
Yeah, you should. Then maybe you guys need to rethink your relationship. So I hope I've shamed you enough, Jason, into agreeing. Now, what I will say is I don't think you should necessarily read Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, also known as Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. And I don't think you should read Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, because in my opinion, those two are dumb. What do you think, Jean Grey? Have you read them?
I haven't, and I'm an avid reader. Yeah. I'm just not a huge Harry Potter fan, and I know it's like just something I'm not into. However, if my boyfriend were into Harry Potter and, you know, I wanted to get involved, I would absolutely read at least a book.
I would actually say that books 1 and 2 were an impediment to me finishing the series. I would not have finished if I did not have a human child in my life who, I don't know whether she was illiterate or just lazy, but she was making me read these books to her. I was like, whoa. But I'm really glad that I did continue to read them. And this is nothing against, I'm sure there are people who love those first two books, but I think it's both as a storyteller and as a writer, J.K. Rowling was sort of clearing her throat a little bit and setting the stage. And then it really got much more interesting and dark and good as the kids got older, you know, and things got. So I would say we'll start with the Goblet of Fire, and I'm ordering you to read it too, Jean. Sorry.
Oh, that's done. You know, I'll try. I'm all for trying, which Jason doesn't seem to want to do. Doesn't want to try.
That's when, because that Goblet of Fire is when you get a little bit bigger picture of what the whole world is and how wizarding happens in other parts of the world and how they're different. And then there's a really dark undercurrent and some bad stuff happens, and it's good. I dig it. So
those are things I like. All right.
Yeah. And he's already seen all the movies. Yeah. Right. So there we go. I think that settles that one. I'm gonna hit the gong. Hit the gong to move on. Bong.
Walker writes, I seek an injunction against my live-in girlfriend and her 10-year-old child. I do the laundry since I have a peculiar folding requirements for my undergarments. Okay.
Whoa.
I contend.
Whoa.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Okay, let's leave that. I wish I didn't.
Maybe it gets better.
I'd rather not leave that to the imagination. I'd rather he just explain what weird mystery cult he belongs to. Or okay, fine. Let's see.
I'm hoping it's origami. Probably not.
The thing is, my leader told me I had to wear underpants made of bologna, and so I need to fold them in an ice chest.
I really need to be the one doing the laundry since nobody else handles this bologna correctly.
All right, let's just say he's got an eccentricity of some kind. Let's continue.
I contend that when undressing, one should try not to turn their clothes inside out. If they stay right side out, it will save the eventual sorter of the finished laundry a considerable amount of time in folding and sorting. I've even mimed over the dinner table how to properly take off a shirt and socks, two of the main offending garments.
Sounds like a fun dinner.
They contend that I am being obsessive, but it's such a simple request. I also believe socks should never be rolled into balls, instead be paired and possibly folded. Judge, should they try their best to keep clothes right side out when undressing?
I loved how he threw the socks in at the last minute there.
Oh, yeah, because you needed to know about the socks. Yeah.
I mean, it was almost like that was the thing that he really wanted to ask, but he was afraid to. It's like, sometimes I fold my underwear and then I do a demonstration. What about the socks, right? Because you can't. Oh, toss that right in.
Wow.
Jean Grey, before I give you my ruling and the correct opinion, do you have a feeling that you would like to share?
Oh, I do. I do. Please. I have a couple of feelings. Yeah, let's start with the miming at the dinner table. I'm going to need Walker to cut that out. Just the entire act of doing that. Two, maybe not the dinner table. Maybe a couch, if you're going to go that far, which you probably shouldn't. And my suggestion would just be that I need him to handle his own laundry, and not expect everybody else to, fold their clothes into, origami-like shapes.
Well,
or have unreasonable requests.
To be fair, I mean, okay. Here's where I'm going to jump in, Gene, and say, as always, you're perfect. But this isn't an issue with his weird underwear folding. He's happy to do that. I agree with you that the miming at the table, miming has to be deployed strategically in any circumstance. Doing it at the table and doing it as underpants and undergarment folding, that's weird and needs to stop. But I will say, all he's asking is that his girlfriend and her daughter make their clothes right side out before putting them in the laundry. And that's absolutely correct. What he is asking for is simple, believable, and right. Now, the 10-year-old, that's not a problem, because 10-year-olds live outside of all human laws. But if your girlfriend is doing this, Walker, you may tell her that I am telling her she's wrong. Because when someone does that, they're not going to do the laundry, then they're leaving work for other people to do. That is work that has to be done. And it may seem like a nothing burger sort of thing to do. And believe me, I can appreciate that it is a pain in the butt to take off your t-shirt and then make sure that it's right side out before putting in the hamper. It's always a pain in the butt to do something rather than not do something. But if you don't do it, someone else will. You know, living in a family is great, especially if you're a child, because you don't have to, people do a lot of stuff for you, you know? You take care of each other. But it doesn't mean that the work isn't there. And in a world, And in a situation, in a context where people are doing stuff for you, like maybe someone's doing your laundry for you because they love you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's easy to forget that is work that's getting done. And so what I try to remind the human children who live in my house all the time is to be mindful of the work they leave behind for others, always. As I think we all should be. Every time we throw something on the street or leave a hotel room having trashed it, which is what I do in every hotel room. You know, it's like, you know, in Western civilization, for the most part, where we're no longer independent hunter-gatherers, we're leaving a lot of the work behind for other people to do. And that's okay, but be mindful of it. And if you can reduce that work a certain degree, then you're being more human. So I think if you take off your t-shirt and you throw it in the laundry inside out, then you're a monster. And I have said that to my children many times.
Well, okay, then I can say something more reasonable then, that perhaps the miming how to properly take off a shirt and socks is not really the thing. Like, I don't need to know how to take off my clothes. If you would like me to, then once the clothing has been removed and before it goes in the laundry bin, to turn them right side out.
Yeah,
that's a fair request.
Yeah, you don't want to ever solve a problem with miming. Miming causes more problems than it solves.
Yeah, and then if you're not going to do the rope or the wall or the elevator after that demonstration, what are we really doing here?
Now, the sock balling up, that's a Marie Kondo thing. Are you familiar with this best-selling book by Marie Kondo, The Everyday Magic of Tidying Up?
No.
Oh, Jean Grey.
Oh, boy.
You can.
I feel like I just don't read books now.
I am ladling books onto your night table now. This is an intense book by a woman, I believe Japanese woman, perhaps Japanese American. I honestly don't know, but mm-hmm. her book is all about getting rid of stuff that doesn't spark joy in your life. That we accrue a lot of stuff that we keep long after it A, serves a purpose, or B, gives us pleasure. And the idea is that every physical item in your home should be actively giving you pleasure. And you're supposed to take all your clothes out and throw them all mm-hmm. on the ground so you see all of your stuff. And then you go through, and we've discussed this on the podcast before, but Gene, loyal listeners, Gene hasn't heard this yet, so I'm just going to quickly go over it again. And then you pick up each item of clothing you have and you concentrate on it and decide, does this spark joy in my life? And if the answer is no, donate it, throw it away, give it to a friend, get it out of your house.
Well, I got to say this then. I actually do this about once every 2 months. And I have I try to be as mindful as possible of not throwing a lot of things away that are not necessarily mine around the house. But I empty my closet, and go around and I'm like, what am I really doing with this? Do I need it? And then, you know, usually
that's wonderful. But Marie Kondo would say those are the wrong questions. The question is,
joy.
Does this make me happy? And let me ask you this, when you throw something away or give it to Goodwill or whatever, do you thank it for its service to you?
I'm always happy that I got good usage out of it.
Do you actually say,
like, that was great?
Do you actually say thank you to that scarf you're donating to Goodwill?
No, because I'm not going to do that.
Right. That's the other aspect of Marie Kondo, is that she thinks everything has feelings.
Yeah,
She has a thing about how the way I grew up putting my socks away after I learned it from, you know, my parents and their parents before them, is you put the socks together and then you fold over the end and ball them up. And she feels that it's unfair to ask, your socks do so much for you. It is unfair to ask them to continue to work when they are at rest. And that's what's happening when you're flexing. Now, I would just say it probably wears out the sock faster, but that blew my mind.
But she's saying that it's hurting the sock feelings.
Yeah. Why would you punish the sock that only wants to help you? by making it work when it's at rest. And even though I was like, that's ridiculous, now I can't ball up socks anymore. I don't want to hurt those little guys.
Well, I'm definitely not reading that book then.
Oh no, I order you to read it. Sorry. No. It's great.
But
it's great.
And I will also suggest as one last thing, the game Katamari Damacy, which is a Japanese game and gives me I know.
Yeah.
But I will say, for those of you who have played it, the joy that you get of tidying up. Now, first, you know, you start small, you start in a home.
Explain what the game is.
I don't think I should explain the bigger picture of the game because it gets a little interesting. Don't want to get into that. But basically, you are, sent to Earth to, create new stars, but made from stuff that is found on Earth. And you are very, very small. And, you basically roll around things into a ball. And you get bigger and bigger and bigger. So for those,
the ball gets bigger. Do you get bigger?
The ball gets bigger and bigger. You do not get bigger. Right. You stay the same.
You just roll up this big ball of junk. Everything that it touches becomes part of the ball of junk.
Until you are rolling up the sky and the rainbows, and it's wonderfully fulfilling.
Yeah. So to that point, I don't know what point you were going to make with
this. Just play the game.
I'll play the game, right. I agree.
Just play the game and leave your socks.
And here comes the bong. Bong. Got a lot of reverb on that one.
That was nice. I felt that one.
Hello, I'm your Judge John Hodgman. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is brought to you every week by you, our members, of course. Thank you so much for your support of this podcast and all of your favorite podcasts at MaximumFun.org, and they are all your favorites. If you want to join the many member supporters of this podcast and this network, boy, oh boy, that would be fantastic. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Made In.
Oh, when you're trying to buy cookware, it's like there's so many questions, so many choices, so many pros and cons. But you should know, Made In has only pros. Pros like Tom Colicchio, Nancy Silverton, Brooke Williamson. That's right, I changed the meaning of pro from good things to professionals who use Made In because they do. Professional chefs love Made In cookware because it's got so many pros.
Can I tell you something about Nancy Silverton, one of the Made In pros?
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
My friend used to work for Nancy Silverton or one of her restaurants. And not only did she adore Nancy Silverton, but Nancy Silverton personally catered her wedding.
That's a real pro move, if you ask me.
Yeah, just like getting Made In cookware. These are people with taste, if you get my double meaning.
I do.
This isn't a Johnny-come-lately company. This evolved from a 100-year-old kitchen supply business. And they work with multi-generational crafters to put together every single piece. So includes carbon steel, stainless clad, plateware, glassware. I know, John, you love all that stuff that you have in your cabinet.
Yeah, I got the glassware. I got the plateware. And I definitely love that carbon steel. And I love their stainless steel. It's got exactly what demanding chefs and I dare say demanding judges look for when they're buying cookware.
And you don't have to find a kitchen supply store. They sell it online. It's delivered straight to your door with the quality that the pros use.
And can I just say, it's at a fraction of the price of other top brands. That's for real. This is really good stuff and it's really affordable. And yet, as affordable as it is, I'm going to tell you this. Judge John Hodgman listeners get 10% off full-priced items from Made In. For full details, visit madeincookware.com/JJHO10. That's madeincookware.com/JJHO10.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online.
Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No. Tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This dispute was submitted jointly by wife Sarah and husband Joe. We've combined their submissions into one. It's regarding the inclusion of trombonist Gabriel McNair and keyboardist Stephen Bradley as members of the band No Doubt. Joe maintains that Gabriel McNair and Stephen Bradley are indeed members of the band, as they go on tour with the group and have been credited on some of their albums and appear on their Wikipedia page. Sarah says, no, they are not members of the band. When they appear, they are credited as with. She adds that they are not even credited as additional musicians on Tragic Kingdom, 1995. They appeal to Judge Hodgman. Please help! As stupid as it is, this is the most serious argument we've ever had in our 4-year relationship.
Well, it is very stupid, I will say that. But before I give my correct and considered opinion on this subject, Gene, do you have a guess as to how I will rule?
You
are the world's greatest No Doubt fan. No Doubt.
I'm a big No Doubt fan.
Sure.
I will say that you would possibly say they are not members of the band.
And as a working musician yourself, mm-hmm. what is your reasoning there?
I have performed many times and been on tour with many bands and many people, and it doesn't make me a member of that band. I performed with The Roots for a very, very long time on albums, on tours, but I was with The Roots. I was not a part of that specific band, and as many musicians travel and are on the road and perform with many other bands, including their own solo projects, that just happens a lot. So, yeah.
And a band is a little bit like a corporation. Do you know? I mean, like mm-hmm. when you perform with The Roots, you are not getting, never mind credit. You're not getting a pre-negotiated amount of the money that is being generated by that performance, right? I mean,
correct.
You know, they have a business relationship with each other.
Yes.
And a way of making decisions that is different, that does not include you. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You can tell that I'm agreeing with you, but I'm deferring to your judgment because I'm learning a lot. And you know, like
no, all of this is correct.
Yeah, a band is a business arrangement, and when other musicians come on, say to play in studio or on tour, they're hired guns. They are hired by the band to do that, and they do not have a portion or a share of the band's financial stake. You know what I mean? So, I mean that's a kind of a rotten way to break it down, but that's what with means when bands are crediting other musicians on their album, right?
Yes, yeah. It does. And, you know, there are certain musicians that will be credited as with, and then others that will just be credited, you know, just in liner notes and such, and it won't even be announced that way. And those are, you know, a lot of session musicians just hired to play within many band sessions.
And Wikipedia itself
is wrong.
Well,
a
no.
lot.
Wikipedia is wrong a lot, Gene, but not as wrong as Joe in this instance, because Joe says the Wikipedia includes them in the band. But unless Sarah has come in and changed it in real time as a Wikipedia editor, it says right here, members Gwen Stefani, Tony Kanal, Tom Dumont, Adrian Young, and then touring and session musicians Gabriel McNair and Stephen Bradley.
Oh, well.
And so it's right there.
There you go.
It's right there. It's right there. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Gabriel Gabe McNair, who is a great trombonist, and I'm sorry Stephen Bradley, who is a trumpet player and singer. But I got to call it as I see it. We all know this is sort of like how you just know a hot dog is not a sandwich. No Doubt presents itself consistently as a four-piece band. Gwen Stefani and the guy who was her boyfriend and the other guy and the other guy. And that's who they are. Bong. Whoa, nice.
You're welcome. Cleo writes, my husband Paul and I have been married for just almost 10 years. Our anniversary is October 26th. We never had a proposal. Our discussions about our relationship just kind of evolved. I miss not having a proposal moment. I've been telling Paul that it isn't too late. The pressure is off. He doesn't have to buy me a ring, and he knows I will say yes. He thinks this is ridiculous and probably sexist.
What?
Both of those... Yeah.
Okay.
Both of those things are probably true. Oh. But I would like a proposal anyway. I desire the judge to issue an order that my husband propose to me, and not just a throw-off proposal, but a sweet and planned one with a flash mob.
You added not with a flash mob.
I did.
Although that's a possibility. I'm going to ask a different question this time of you, guest bailiff Jean Grey. Can you figure out why Paul thinks that a proposal is, quote, probably sexist, and why Cleo says that's probably true? I don't get that at all. Just because it's sort of traditional or what?
Yeah, I think, I think a lot of times, and especially now, there's some things that women are made to feel like, oh, well, if you like that, then that's a, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to wear makeup to be pretty. And you're like, ah, I just kind of want to wear makeup. I think if she just needs to realize that it's just something that she actually really wants and it doesn't make it sexist.
Yeah, I mean, if she were saying, if she were saying that a component of the proposal is, say, him asking her father for permission to marry mm-hmm. her, then yeah, that is sexist because that is treating a woman like property that is treated
and also
men.
Dowry.
Right, exactly. But I don't see. It's interesting. I feel like Paul's really pulling out all of the buzzwords in order to get out of doing the simple thing of making a wonderful gesture towards his wife that he knows will make her happy and would cost him zero emotionally or financially. So don't be a creep, dude. Do it. Figure out some honest way that would be meaningful. Think about your wife for a second and think about what might really make her happy and what kind of gesture would really make her happy in terms of how the proposal would be expressed, whether that would be just simply taking her out to dinner and taking her hand and saying, I never said this. So it's long overdue. Will you marry me? Boom. Instant tears. You're going to have a great date. You guys will have a great dinner. Or you could like rent a Zeppelin or, you know what I mean? Like,
or you could go the Zeppelin route. Yeah.
You know what? Here's what I'm going to do. Because I'm a little concerned that Paul is going to just punt this and just be like, that's so sexist. I'm not going to do it. So this goes out, Jean Grey. This one goes out to Cleo. I have a letter here from her husband, Paul, that he wrote to me. Dear Judge John Hodgman, I have been married to Cleo for 10 years. Because of how our relationship just evolved, and maybe because I was a little unthinking and lazy, I neglected to propose to her when we got married. I know it would mean a lot to her, and so Judge John Hodgman, since we're both such big fans of your podcast, would you possibly read this message for my wife that I wrote myself with my own hand? This will be a real surprise to her. And if she's driving when this podcast comes out, we might both die in a fiery crash, and I wouldn't want us to die without her knowing. Cleo, I love you very much. I'm not a creep. This may seem a little sexist, but the truth is, that I don't want to ever take anything for granted in our marriage. Most of all, your love. I can't, even though we've been happily married for 10 years and can logically conclude that you want to be married to me, it was a mistake to never ask you. And so now, through Judge John Hodgman, I'm asking, will you marry me? Signed, your husband, Paul. Thanks, John. I hope you read this on the air. And also, isn't it? Doesn't like balling up your socks like hurt the socks feelings? That's just a PS. Please answer if you have time. Thanks, Paul. There you go. I didn't know that guy had it in him.
No, me neither. Yeah. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Aww.
Bong, 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 bong.
Marriage.
That's the extra long bong and wonderful harmonies from Gene Gray. That was John Hodgman.
Thank you.
With Gene Gray. Sorry, Gene. Sorry, Gene. You're just a session musician on this one. Amazing guest.
Okay. I'm not in the band. It's fine.
You're not in the band. I'm sorry. You're not in the band. And I think that means that we've come to the end of this particular docket, which is now cleared. Do we have some thanks and housekeeping to do, Ms. Jean
If
Gray?
You have a case for the judge, submit it at www.MaximumFun.org/JJHO. I've been your guest bailiff, Jean Gray.
Jean Gray can be reached on Twitter at Jean Greasy. That's at JEANGREASY. I am at Hodgman, HODGMAN. And of course, johnhodgman.com/tours, where you'll find out where I will be appearing all over the country. Two countries.
Julia Smith produces the show. Mark McConville is our editor. Thank you for joining us for the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Bong.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.